Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano, and Steve Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I failed to mention last hour, and Walker would have done it had he been here, where you can listen and watch on the internet this show. You can go to Facebook and YouTube and just type in Today's Issues, and then you can live stream.
We're live streaming.
We're live video streaming the show, so you can look inside the studios here. And I don't know if you'll be disappointed or not. If you are, by what you see, please don't tell us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We don't need to know. That's unnecessary information that's hurtful.
Right.
So just
I don't want anyone emailing me and saying, you look old.
Right. Or something like tired, old, used, washed up, things of that nature. We don't need to hear that. So, but if you want to participate with the show with Facebook and YouTube, just type in Today's Issues. We want to note that tomorrow we start Share-a-thon here, our spring Share-a-thon here at American Family Radio. So it'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We'll be here doing our show just like we always do. Well, we will be in Share-a-thon mode starting tomorrow. So please, we are listener-supported Christian radio, folks. So we have to have your support to stay on the air. And so please, you know, make it a point to make a donation and be as generous as you can so that we can keep broadcasting on this station you're listening to. We would appreciate that very, very much. Steve, good morning to you again.
It's good to be here.
Or good afternoon if you were in the Eastern time zone.
That's right, it is.
What's going on?
I got some interesting things coming out of the courts right now. Let's start with the Supreme Court, which has decided to listen to or to take on or to grant cert to three cases, which they're going to lump into one of the Supreme Court is going to express its opinion on LGBT employment issues. The one case that we're focusing in on of the three is one out of Michigan, where a transgender woman or a man who dresses as a woman was fired by a funeral home where he worked because he alleges the employers penalized her on the basis of gender identity. So she is suing because she was just denied a job after she...
So she's a woman who believes... Okay.
I'm sorry.
The dude. The dude who put the dress on.
He is suing because he was fired after putting
on. He's like Bruce Jenner.
He is.
Okay.
And the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals...
Hold on. I got a joke. You got that straight, Ed? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Broom.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
That one's funny only because you're the boss.
Right, okay. Anyway, yeah, I know it was a five, but I thought it was still worth using. Go ahead, Steve.
The Alliance Defending Freedom is representing the owner of the funeral home in this case. And he spoke to Chris Woodward just a little bit ago. And
who did?
The owner of the... Not yet.
Okay.
We will hear from them shortly.
So you know, I don't blame the funeral home owner or any business owner. Quite frankly, if I own a business, and you got you hire a man to do a job, and then the man switches on you and says, "No, I'm a woman, and I'll be in high heels tomorrow," and you don't want that person representing your company, I think you have a right. You should have a right to that decision about employment. Now, in states like Mississippi, I don't know, there are states where you can fire somebody for any reason.
Right, you can fire someone for being a Yankees fan.
Or no reason at all. You don't have to give a reason. I know
people
terminate in Mississippi, and this is where we live. There are other states like this.
Maybe I think Michigan is actually one.
You don't have to say
fire at will.
Huh?
Fire at will. States.
Yeah. Well, that's right. You don't
what
have
will
to.
Do to you.
Well, I don't fact, know, but we're going to fire at them.
In fact, when we've terminated people here before, we've had to for various reasons. You know, our lawyer always said, sad when this happens, and it doesn't happen often, but our lawyer says you don't have to state a reason. And don't.
Yes.
Just give them severance pay and say thanks for working here and see you later.
Right.
You know, go ahead.
So Michigan is a right to work state, but what I'm not clear of is if that right to work supersedes the federal classes. In other words, if you fired someone because they were a woman or because they were a black or a Christian, these are protected statuses.
We're confusing things here. Now, a right-to-work state is a state where you do not have to join a union.
Well,
but
it also means that you can fire someone for any reason.
That's a fire-at-will
state. Fire-at-will state, okay. I might be confusing those two, but I think Michigan's one. Let's hear from the owner of this funeral home and hear what he has to say about this.
Businesses should be able to rely on what the law says, not what government agencies like the EEOC want it to say. Punishing us with a large financial penalty for enforcing our dress code consistent with the law is unfair and wrong. Because the EEOC is seeking back pay and punitive damages, we could be forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. Few small businesses can survive that type of loss.
Okay, now let me just explain. Now, the 64 or 65 legislation that most of these kind of cases rely on prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex. Now, when Congress passed the law...
Like male, female.
Yes.
Right.
When they
or
passed
race.
The law... Well, but the key issue here is
sex.
Okay. Because when Congress passed the law, what they said was you can't discriminate on the basis of male or female. You know, for, you know, like a lawyer. We can't say, we're not hiring you because you're a woman. Okay? Now, what the homosexual movement and the transgender movement are claiming is that sexual orientation and transgender status should fit inside that category of sex.
They're trying to make it fit into Title VII of the Civil Rights Act.
And what this man was saying that we just heard, he was saying the EEOC is claiming that the word sex includes sexual orientation and transgender status or transgender identity, but that's not what the law was drafted to mean.
So this is going to the Supreme Court?
It is. They have granted cert today. The second case that I wanted to bring to you was hasn't been granted cert yet, but this is out of the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a very important circuit court of appeals. They ruled today or yesterday, a Friday they ruled, they upheld the House of Representatives' requirement that it start each day in session with a religious prayer. Some guy named Daniel Baker, who's the co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, applied to say a secular prayer. The House said no, and he sued. And this is at the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeal. Let me read you some of their language. It's remarkable, and I ran this past Abe on my way in. He said it's remarkable as well. Even though we accept as true Baker's allegation that Conroy, who's the chaplain of the House of Representatives, rejected him because he's an atheist, the House requirement that prayers must be religious nonetheless precludes Barker from doing the very thing he was asked us to order Conroy to allow him to do, to deliver a secular prayer. In other words, even if, as Barker alleges, he was actually excluded simply for being an atheist, he's entitled to none of the relief he asks. We could not order Conroy to allow Baker to deliver a secular invocation because the House permissively limits the opening prayer to a religious prayer. This is remarkable coming from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Often been liberal.
Well, they have been, but I don't know who the three-judge panel is, this may be a result of Donald Trump feeding more conservative judges into the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which he's been doing.
Right.
I don't know that because I don't know who the three judges were and who appealed them, but this is they just kicked the atheists out of the club.
Yes, because they said the chaplain, they said, has every right, and the House of Representatives has every right to say, we open up with a religious prayer. We don't have to do a secular to whom it may concern or, that's a common sense. It's remarkable. What's remarkable is that a common sense ruling is remarkable.
I know.
the world's gotten so crazy. The fact that a religious prayer opening a session at the House of Representatives is a religious prayer, not an atheistic prayer. How did we get here?
Oh, years and years of the secular takeover of culture, I would
What's
say.
What's an atheistic prayer?
I guess a secular invocation that just, I don't know who you're invoking, who you're praying to. I don't, you know, Dan Barker's, he's been.
Dear me, Heavenly Father, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he would have.
The prayer was actually submitted. I didn't have time to find it. It would be interesting to hear it, though. President Trump is starting to nail down, screw the thumb screws onto Iran. Today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that we were done giving countries that were still getting oil from Iran any relief. Any exemptions from now on, it's going to be zero. Let's hear the Secretary of State. This is cut four.
Last November, we granted exemptions from our sanctions to seven countries and to Taiwan. With this is to give our allies and partners to wean themselves off of Iranian oil and to assure a well-supplied oil market. Our goal has been to get countries to cease importing Iranian oil entirely. Today, I'm announcing that we will no longer grant any exemptions. We're going to zero. Going to zero across the board. The goal remains simple, to deprive the outlaw regime of the funds it has used to destabilize the Middle East for four decades and incentivize Iran to behave like a normal country.
The countries that had these exemptions that are no longer going to have them are Greece, Italy, Taiwan, which he somehow exempted them from country status when he made the announcement here, China, India, Japan, South Korea, and Turkey.
Well, you know, how could you have such vast differing views on Iran as do maybe that's not the correct English, as does President Obama and President Trump. President Obama embraced Iran, right?
Well, he
gave them a lot of money. He took off the sanctions.
Right.
Huh? He welcomed them back into the nation,
Brotherhood of Nations.
Brotherhood of Man. He said, you're good. Yeah. Now, we'll keep an eye on you.
Oh, and here's a couple billion dollars in cash.
Right.
Yeah, and he delivered.
In the middle of the night.
He delivered the cash in the middle of the night on an airplane.
On a pallet.
That was like something out of a James Bond movie or something
right.
like that. Huh?
The only thing missing would be to drop it with a parachute.
So President Obama says Iran's good. We're going to keep an eye on them, but we don't think that they're a threat to world peace or to America or Israel by having a nuclear weapon. And yet, now President Trump comes in and says, whoa, just a minute. They are a threat to the world. There's a reason they chant death to America in their parliament or whatever it is, and death to Israel, right? And they are building a nuclear weapon, as Benjamin Netanyahu has documented, or weapons, and we need to maintain economic sanctions on them till they stop. That's what the president said, President Trump.
In addition, they have a ballistic missile program that they are exporting and terror that they are exporting to many countries around the world of financing. Those are the other accusations.
There are a lot of people who accuse President Obama of just wanting to get some kind of, you know, just get a deal done. Doesn't matter how good or how bad it is.
You're talking about President Trump?
Yeah. No,
Obama,
no,
a legacy
Obama.
Deal.
Oh, okay.
Just get something done. Doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. Just say it's good and that Iran is good to go and send them a bunch of money.
Plus, I don't know what was in President Obama's mind when he did this, but he was certainly not as friendly to Israel as President Trump has been, and maybe he didn't really care.
I think what's in his mind is he said, I have to justify this Nobel Peace Prize I got before I did anything.
Well, I don't know. I just found it on something like Iran, you have so vastly differing views, as did as President Obama and President Trump.
You know, well, this is a bold move
by the president
Trump administration. Taking, yes, by saying, "All right, we're going to put sanctions on people who
even
are buying their oil." Yeah,
even our friends. We're serious about this, and they gave them time to adjust.
I mean, Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan.
Right.
That's huge. Turkey.
Well, I think
that's
what President Trump is saying, Iran is a bad actor.
Right.
They're a threat to world stability, and they might just fire a nuclear weapon at somebody or multiple countries, and we need to stop this And the president, Trump, has said, you need to be willing, you, all countries need to be willing to join us in this endeavor, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to.
Or you're no friend of ours.
Yeah, you're going to have to wean yourself off. He gave them time to wean themselves off of.
Three countries have.
Iranian oil.
Italy and Taiwan and Greece already have.
I thought Greece was one of the countries he cited.
Well, that was one of the three. It's one of the countries, but that they had given an exemption to. These three have already met that goal, so this isn't going to affect them.
Greece was broke.
Well, they're getting oil from somewhere.
I think they're riding bikes.
Well, maybe they don't need as much oil. By the way, the United States is now the number one exporter of oil in the world, so they shouldn't have a problem finding oil.
Right.
Okay. Next story.
The United Methodist Church has been really kind of quarreling within itself about what to do with the LGBT movement. There are several within the leadership of the United Methodist Church that think that they need to be more inclusive. They maybe need to go the way of some of the other mainline denominations that have allowed same-sex marriage, etc. The most of the people in the pew are not along with that, but the leadership makes a lot of the decisions. The leadership did, about a month ago, decide that they were going to go with a plan which is conservative and not allow any of the LGBT incursion into the denomination. There's a lot of churches that are fighting that, and what the scuttlebutt is that they are edging toward a divorce between the liberal and the non-liberal United Methodist
churches. Let's put it
churches.
This way, between the liberal and the Bible-believing
right.
sections of the United Methodist
right.
Church.
Right. So it's going to be interesting to see, but this is the I read somewhere that the United Methodist Church is the largest denomination, largest mainline denomination in the country. Now, I don't know if they're not including Southern Baptists as mainline anymore.
The Southern Baptists are not considered mainline.
They're considered evangelical.
Evangelical.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
so
then
you have your Roman Catholic. I'm talking about branches of Christianity in America that are people recognize Catholic.
Yep.
And then your Protestant would be your Methodist, your Episcopalian, your Presbyterian, your Lutheran, and your Pentecostal. Well, the Pentecostal branch would be, most of them would be considered evangelical, wouldn't they? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think so.
It's like your assembly.
Don't forget there's Eastern Orthodox, too. So
yes.
You have Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, and Protestant. And Protestant has these various.
But the evangelical branch of Protestantism, not to get too detailed here, would include like Southern Baptist.
Right.
Assembly.
A lot of non-denominational
Assemblies
churches.
Assemblies of God. Yes, a lot of evangelical Bible churches.
Right.
So those, anyway.
So anyway, I think we need to pray for some reconciliation, or that
I don't think there's.
No, they need to split.
They need to split.
Okay.
This is one of those things where you can't. I'm not saying anything to you, Steve. I'm saying my appraisal of this is there's no reconciling with a false prophet.
Okay.
And the leadership of the United Methodist Church, by and large, in this country. As opposed to, say, in Africa,
right.
Where the bishops and stuff are Bible-believing, evangelical, these people in this country are false prophets, false teachers.
Right.
And there's no reconciling with them. And I think what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to say, you keep your church building
because
you guys paid for it. And
decide which way you're going to go.
Decide which way you're
going to
go.
And they need to split. So United Methodist Church would split. Let the people who embrace the LGBT movement and say that is of God and we welcome it, let them go their way.
Right.
And then let the people who say no, this behavior is not scriptural and we can't embrace it and condone it, let them go their way.
Right.
And that way, you know, that's better for all of them. And I think that's where we're headed probably with the United Methodist Church.
And then what you'll see is whatever these sides call themselves, you will see the Bible-believing Methodists prosper and grow, because that's what evangelical churches, generally speaking, do. And you'll see the leftist.
They'll die out.
They'll go the way of the Episcopalian
right,
Church and the Presbyterian Church USA and
right.
some of these others, and they will
right.
dwindle away.
Right. That's what will happen. That's our prediction anyway. That's I think it. That's what will happen. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of this show. And you can send us an email at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Next story, Steve.
Do you think the Democrats have enough choices now for 2020? We just had the 20th official candidate enter the race for the Democrats.
Is that 20? A, is that a, would that be a silver anniversary? What is that?
I don't know.
You know what 20th? What is this? 20? Is that 25? What
well, 20th, I took my wife out to Chili's, so yeah. I don't know.
Romantic, really? Aren't
it was
you?
A Chili's.
And she wanted to go there, I'm sure.
It was. Yeah. That was a six.
What is that? Brent, look up 20th anniversary and see if it's silver.
That was 18 years ago, so.
Silver's 25, so I don't know what 20 is. But anyway, so you're saying the 20th person has now entered the Democrat presidential.
Two Republicans, too, by the way, but yes.
All right, who's the latest Democrat?
The latest Democrat is Massachusetts Congressman and war veteran Seth Moulton.
Oh, okay. Seth yes. Moulton.
Yeah, Seth Moulton.
Household yeah. name.
Congressman. Yeah.
Or as we said in our story meeting this morning, who's that?
And to which you said, that's exactly the point.
That's the problem.
That's his problem.
That's going to be his problem. We did catch him on some show saying why
he's
he
a Marine. He's a Democrat, huh?
He's a Marine. Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, okay. They come in all shapes and sizes. I wanted to play you a little bit about why he says he's running. This is cut 7.
And so what we need are leaders who have the courage to be honest about the problems that we face in America and are actually going to develop an economic plan for the future so that every American has a job that matters in the new economy, not going back into the coal mines like Trump says, but in the new economy. We need leaders who understand how to make us strong and safe in our national security, not leaders who tweet at our enemies, but people who actually have strong plans to keep us safe. And smart plans to make sure that we're meeting the threats of the future, not just relying on a military of the past. And we need Democrats who are willing to reform government. If we're the party that believes that government can help, then let's show how we're going to make sure government works for everybody in America.
Wow, I'm just stunned at the specifics of that plan.
Well, it's kind of hard. I kind of pity
a
these
chicken
Democrats.
In every pot.
Kind of, but...
Or pot, too, now for Democrats.
Pot in every pot.
Pot in every pot.
Okay.
We got chickens and you got pot, free, people. What else do you want? You want school? Okay, we'll give you college.
The country is doing so well. It's got to be hard for these guys. By the way, Tim, this might be instructive. Your 20th, traditional 20th anniversary gift, China.
Oh! Yeah, there's some metaphor.
There's something there. Yeah, we'll work on it. So that is the 20th candidate. Now, that doesn't include Joe Biden, who is not announced yet,
who will be 21.
Oh, yeah. He's not 21. Oh, you're talking about number 21.
Number 21.
Right. This is now, I thought 17 was a lot for the Republicans in 2015, 2016.
This is going to be like a Miss America pageant here before long with 50 candidates. And, you know, they're going to have to come out on stage. I think they should do it like that. I think they need to come out.
bathing suits.
Heaven help us if they do the bathing suit.
Joe Biden in briefs?
Ooh.
In a Speedo? Oh, you don't think
some
so?
Things
man.
I can't unsee.
You don't like
unsee.
That visual?
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, okay. Oh, what a way to go out
need,
of the
but
show.
They need all.
I was going to go get lunch. Now I'm kind of sick.
Now, I'm saying the talent will weigh more, though, than the swimsuit competition.
Yes, because that's what
I think they need to have a talent. All 21 of them need to have a talent and need to be ready.
Because kids need maps and such.
But their answers will be the same as Miss America.
Yeah.
You know, I want world peace. I'm going to work
end
for
world hunger.
End world hunger.
And the kids need maps and such.
Right. All right. Hey, Sherathon tomorrow, folks. We'll see you back here then. Thank you for joining us today.